Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
Oh, welcome into the Deuce and Mo podcast. No Christmas beam for the Sacramento Kings. In fact, it was one of their ugliest losses of the season. All of a sudden, they have dropped four in a row. This time, the Indiana Pacers came to town. They're starting to turn their season around. They had won three in a row coming into tonight's game, and they took care of business. After this game was tied at 52 apiece at the half, the Pacers moved the ball. They attacked. They swung. They knocked down shots. They hit a season-high 58% from the field, while Sacramento mustered a season-low 36% from the field, and the Kings were just absolutely embarrassed on the home floor, 122-95. They are now 6-11 on the home floor. The only other team with 11 losses on the home floor, the Washington Wizards. The Kings are 13-17. It's a mess. They probably needed to move 3-4 weeks ago, and now they are absolutely spiraling out of control, and who the hell knows what's in store. We're going to try to figure it all out tonight. I'm Deuce Mason, normally joined by Morgan Reagan. She is off tonight on her way back to Sacramento from Orlando, where she's been doing broadcast work for the NBA G League Showcase on NBA TV. So I'm joined tonight by one of my favorites who covers the Sacramento Kings and the NBA for Sactown Sports. You can also check them out on the Kings Beat Podcast. The one, the only, Brendan Nunes!
What's up, people?
Come on, crowd, give him some love. Yeah.
Got big shoes to fill with Morgan, you know, and Deuce said nobody was going to be on me. People are on me for the lighting over here. I'm looking real pale. I swear I got a little more color in person, you know.
But yeah.
I don't blame him. I'm glad to be here, man. I'm going to try to match your energy best I can, even though it's a high bar.
You be yourself. You be yourself, because honestly, I'm the one that's over the top. When things are going super well, I'm fired up. When they get low, I get really low. And right now, I do feel really low. I would say this. In some regard, I'm glad we're starting the podcast now, because in the minutes after the pod, after the game and driving back, I was definitely in my feelings about things, because I don't handle uncertainty well as someone who's born and raised in Sacramento. So there's so many layers to go over, and I'm fascinated to get your perspective, not only on tonight's game, but big picture stuff, right? It's been a wild week for Sacramento. Think about this. It started Monday, right, against the Nuggets. Was that Monday? Whatever day.
It
started earlier this week with a loss to the Nuggets when you're up 10 with 3:55 to go. You lost to your old head coach, Michael Malone. Then the hated Lakers come to town, knock you around for two consecutive games. And it's capped off right before Christmas with Tyrese Haliburton, Pascal Siakam coming to town and absolutely destroying you on your home floor. So there's a lot to go over with that and to figure out, where do the Kings go from here? I think we all agree something has to happen, right? A tweak with the roster, sure. Or do they go crazier and blow it up? But Brendan, let's start with this game tonight. I mean, it started well because I felt like the effort was there. Even if the shots weren't falling, they were diving for loose balls. Indiana was missing some good looks, I thought. Where did this go wrong tonight for Sacramento? Like when you're reflecting back on tonight's game, what jumps out to you?
I mean, I feel like it has to be that start of the third quarter, really. Indiana got out on a 9-0 run pretty quick in that quarter. And does TJ McConnell just like always do this against the Kings? I know that he's a really good player and this is his style and what he does, but I feel like he kills the Kings every single time.
He does. And I thought that it was just a Kings thing. He does it to a lot of teams. He's just a really good player. Sense. He's one of those guys to me that like every team in the league would want. But yeah, he always plays well against Sacramento.
He always does. And he wasn't the only one. You know, they got their the ball movement back, I thought, for the Pacers. You know, big thing Mike Brown emphasized coming into it was that the Pacers play with a lot of pace, a lot of spacing, and they get downhill a lot. And I thought that the Kings controlled the pace in the first half of this game, really, that there wasn't much transition game from Indiana. And when they got to a half court offense, it got kind of ugly, even for moments. Like Benedict Mathurin threw up a couple shots where I was like, I don't know what the heck that was. You mentioned it earlier, Tyrese missed his first four shots in this one as well, and then, you know, did all right for the rest of the game after that. But I thought that they did a really good job, they being the Kings, like just setting the tone and controlling the pace in that first half. And then it got totally out of hand. They miss a couple shots because, you know, you're not getting to your spray threes, hot word with Mike Brown right there. And then you drop your heads a little bit, and it takes 2 seconds for Andy to be down the other side and getting buckets up.
Watching the Pacers, and not just this year, but, you know, especially last year at the start, it should be noted, like, Indiana's had their struggles this year too, right? They came into this game 13-15. It seems like they're starting to come out of it a little bit. But tonight, at the very least tonight, they play the style that, like, I think the Kings want to play, right? The ball was popping. They were making the extra pass. They're playing with pace, not only in transition, but in their early offense, when they're just getting into their offense fast. The ball movement was great. They're getting in the paint. They're kicking out. They were swinging it. And then they knocked down shots. They also have some pretty good athletes. They also have a guy now in Siakam that when they do need a bucket, they can get him the ball and he can go get them a bucket. I thought he went hunting a lot in this game tonight, He's looking around going, "Man, McDermott, yeah, I'll take on that guy. Oh, Kevin Huerter, doesn't matter. I feel comfortable." The one guy he struggled with, I thought early, and to your point, in that first quarter, was Keegan Murray. I thought Keegan did a great job on Siakam. He was playing physical, bumping him. There were no good shots, but Indiana's adjustment was like, "Oh, we'll get Sacramento to switch. We do a lot of off-ball movement. We screen well. Let's just get Siakam in some good spots." But my whole point is, it's tough to watch because it was just 2 years ago that Sacramento had the number one offensive rating in history at the time, and they played like Indiana played tonight. Like, yeah. It is just crazy to see how fast this has shifted, and it's disappointing in a lot of ways.
It definitely is. I mean, your strength and superpower of this team needs to be the offense. I know Mike Brown's always the guy that's going to say, like, that I will come, essentially, and defensively is where they need to improve, and he's not wrong with that, but you make your money on the offensive end as this team, and they scored 100 in the first game against the Lakers, and they didn't reach the triple digit mark in these last two games, last one against the Lakers, tonight against Indiana. It's the ball movement. I mean, you said it, that Indiana plays exactly how the Kings want to, and they just played that game better tonight, specifically in the second half. Kevin Huerter said as much. He said, you know, back to last year, that's how they were playing. And there's more moments this year where there's lulls. And I want to be pretty clear, I don't think this is DeMar DeRozan's fault at all. I think he's doing what he can out there, even though he's had a pretty rough, actually, last three games, yeah. Very rough. But I think it's just the nature of when you do bring in a guy like DeRozan and what his skill set is. But it was known what he is coming in. And so you're getting a little bit more pick and roll game rather than DHO. There's not the same. I remember when Kevin first got here from Atlanta, super pick and roll heavy team, that everything's just through Trae Young. He's like, the ball is power. And he seemed to really appreciate the ball movement, and that has slowed down a lot. And I think specifically in these lulls that you see, it's like a lot of these guys, they have good self-creators, Fox, DeMar, Malik, you know, they have those guys that can go do it, but sometimes it can throw the flow off, and then you're living or dying with a tough shot when in reality, break your guy down, bring a second defender, and then they trust your teammates to capitalize on the advantage. And I think sometimes that just gets lost a little, or there's hero ball moments. And I'm not exactly sure what to make of why, but some of these offensive struggles are what I think can't continue, because that's where you have to be good with the talent that you have on this roster.
But what, like, I guess I struggle with, like, what are they as a team though? You know? And I think right now with Monk in the starting lineup, I think it got off to a nice start. Guys were knocking down shots. There was some extra energy. The pace was good. You also took on a couple of teams like New Orleans and Utah, not, you know, great. There's some other ones mixed in there. I'm not trying to discount it at all. They made shots and looked like the ball was starting to pop now. But recently, and maybe it's because teams have taken them out of things a little bit, maybe their confidence is shot, their shots aren't falling, that flow is gone. And it feels to me like they go through phases of, oh, we're going to play the right way, but Tamar's maybe not getting his touches. Let's get him some looks, you know? And it becomes like we're force feeding DeMar DeRozan at that point, or like you were talking about, like, oh, Fox has to do something here. And that free flowing offense is just gone. And they really haven't found a good balance. There have been stretches this year where it looks like it's all coming together. They had that one game where they ran that same play with DeRozan like 80 times and it worked well. And they got the win. And you're like, okay, maybe they're figuring something out, having that balance, but that balance hasn't been there. And you're right. I think offensively it's crazy. Like, we're talking about struggling to score 100 2 years ago. In Mike Brown's first year, they had four games where they scored under 100 points. Last year, it was 10 games. We're already to 5 this year in 30 games. In a league, well, you score a lot, right? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reality is, and I know it's not a fun part of the conversation because it's like, what are you supposed to do about it? But they're not hitting their threes very well throughout most of this season. That plays a big part, obviously. Kevin started slow, I think. I think he's coming around recently, by the way. I feel like Kevin's been doing a little bit of everything out there. He did get attacked a little bit on defense today. But Keegan shooting pretty not great from three throughout the course of this year. He mentioned in that Athletic piece that kind of outlined the whole Fox situation that his shots are a little bit different, that he was used to coming off DHOs. And I'd bet you his whole offseason, maybe not this last one, but especially after his rookie year, he's just going off DHOs. He's practicing coming off DHOs and shooting. And now it's a little bit different, you know? So the three-point shooting doesn't help for sure, but I think even when that's not falling, you have to still trust the guys to do it because you don't really have a choice in my mind, or else you're living with what we kind of have been recently, Fox tough midi, DeRozan tough midi, and it's like, or Domas trying to almost Angel Reese it out there. I'm going to just throw it up. Hey, and, you know,
I'm glad you brought up Sabonis because that's where I wanted to go with next tonight. He who came out, and I know people want him. Hey, Sabonis, be aggressive. You look at the final numbers. He had 17 and 21. But watching the game, I didn't think he had a good game. I mean, yeah, the rebounding's great. 21 rebounds, you don't just dismiss that. But it felt like he was forcing things. Really, and I don't know how much this has to do with the fact that he's going up against his old team. He's going up against Miles Turner, his old teammate, the Halliburton thing. It's a big game at home. Second, I have a back-to-back. You know, it's you've lost three in a row. If he felt like he had to do that. But that's where it goes back to the same thing I'm talking about, like the flow. Like, you're attacking some of these shot blockers the last couple of games, like Anthony Davis and Miles Turner in like ISO situations where those guys are like, you're not even making me work. Great. You want to try to play bully ball with me? You might get me once or twice, but I've got the length to bug your shot and I will bug your shot. And that's what you saw from Miles Turner tonight. You saw that the Kings had trouble with Anthony Davis and, you know, Cam Reddish against the Lakers, Rui, like, I don't know. It just felt like tonight specifically Sabonis was forcing it too much. I mean, he was launching threes like more than he ever has, which I know, you know, you want him to do that, but it just didn't feel like it was his type of game tonight. I'm like, where's this guy been?
22 shot attempts is pretty crazy for Domas.
15 at the half. He had 15 at the half. Yeah.
I looked as we were getting close, and I don't think that passed his career high, but it was right near it. And I asked him after the game, like, you know, was that a game plan thing coming in? Did you have a mindset coming into the game? He's like, no, I was just kind of taking what they gave me. And I would, you know, if I had to guess, it would kind of be what you said, that like the team needs something right now. And even Domas, like he said, he's banged up right now. He's definitely feeling it. I think he has been for a while now, by the way. And he's like, well, I don't feel like I can sit. We're at a point where the team needs me. And that might be that same mindset that leads to him putting up 22 shots. But for the Kings to be at the point where a guy that's always been a pass first guy his whole career, it's actually been hard to get him to take this many shots. And now he's doing this potentially out of like, we need something, almost like desperation of sorts. Like it says a lot about the state of the team.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, we love each other. We're all staying together. We're not necessarily getting mad like we did last year. This year, we're trying to more stay together. It's like, oh, that's great. And I do think that's all real and not lip service, but it's got to show at some point.
Yeah. And I think to that, you can love somebody and still get on somebody, you know, like, I think that's something the team has lacked. Is who on that team is calling somebody out? You know, I've seen Kevin Durant in a game go at Nurkic and like to fire him up and get his head in the game. Have we seen that with a Kings team the last 3 years? You know, and you
since go, I covered the team, dude, I mean, 6-7 years, something like that.
It can't just be coaches. And we've said that forever, right? It's like, okay, Mike can yell at you. Mike can call a timeout. This was another game where like there's four, you know, over 4 minutes left and Mike Brown has no timeouts. I'm like, what are you supposed to do? Like there has to be some like accountability. Like,
well, and it can't be Matthew Dellavedova. It can't be JaVale McGee, like a guy that's not playing at this stage of their career. It has to be somebody that is contributing decently and doing it while they're out there on the floor, not just, oh, as you come into the huddle, you know, because Jay Crowder seems like a guy that gets in people's ears a lot. He doesn't have that effect because he's not playing those minutes.
And he's still like new here too, right?
Right.
He's still trying to get to know guys, get comfortable. He's not playing, like you said. So I feel like in a competitive environment, that's what you need. I mean, me and Morgan get on each other sometimes during a podcast or during a broadcast, during a break. It's like, hey, dude, what the hell are you doing? Like, focus, you know? Like, yeah.
Get that intro right.
Let's go. Yeah. Like, dude, what are you doing? But seriously, like, it will be like during a Kings broadcast and she'll be like upset about something. And like she did. I'll be like, dude, lock in. It's over. It's a turnover. We're playing. Let's go.
Is Chelsea competitive with that stuff? I bet so.
Chelsea's so chill, dude. Chelsea's okay. The best. Okay. Dude. Chelsea's great. Morgan's great too. But I'm just saying, like, I obviously we've worked together for a long time, so the dynamics are. But Chelsea's so chill. She's great. Yeah. Where was I going with that? Yeah. There's just not. No one is like. I have not seen anyone get on a teammate, and I'd love to see that a little bit. The other thing I was going to mention to you, I noted this early in the game. Look, I like Tyrese Halliburton as a person. I like him as a player. I talked to him before the game tonight, so I'm not trying to act like I'm shit talking here. To put it mildly, he's not a good defensive player. He did get fired up after he actually, I think he might have gotten a piece of a Fox jumper late, and Fox was staring at him after. I didn't think Fox liked that Tyrese was all pumped up. Whatever. But you know what I mean? He's not known for being a good defensive player. The Kings never went at him. I'm watching in the first quarter going, he's on Malik Monk right now. I'm sorry. He can't guard Malik Monk. The one time I noticed they did this, DeMar DeRozan got the ball in the post with Halliburton on him. The help came. DeRozan made a pass out to the top of the three-point line. They swung it around, and it led to an open three that was made. I'm not saying you have to go ISO mode and seek out that mismatch to get yours, but that help's going to come and you can make that quick decision to get the ball moving. They didn't do enough of that. I just don't understand. Like I watch the NBA enough to see these other teams. They're going at Halliburton. They're trying to make him work, put him in action because help has to come. And when help comes, that means someone's open and you can get the ball moving. Sacramento didn't do that tonight. And it just was surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, and because Indiana did the same thing to them. But Sacramento was switching a lot out there, too.
Siakam.
Herter's getting attacked. Yep. You know, Doug McDermott getting attacked. Trey Lyles getting targeted in switches, you know. And, yeah, Tyrese should be that guy. Indiana was switching a lot of stuff, too. I would think that maybe, like, the flow offense that they still try to run a bit, which, to be fair, Indiana does the same thing.
Yeah.
Makes it not as natural as, like, just as simply – Tyrese was guarding Keegan at the beginning of the game, which is one of the things that drives me insane, by the way, is that Chris Paul, Tyrese Halliburton, you're hiding guys on Keegan Murray when he's, like, 6'8". At one point, he drove to the basket, and he got – he tried to go, like, through Tyrese and got kind of flustered, wasn't even that close. I'm like, dude, you got to be able to overpower these guys. But yeah, I mean, I think that they should have gone at that mismatch more for sure. And you mentioned it before, but like they're going at not even just not going at the weak link necessarily, but they're attacking the totally wrong guys. Anthony Davis specifically in those Laker games, it was really a problem. And then it happened against Miles Turner tonight too. It's like you have the isolation scoring at some point. hey, this is the mismatch. Screw this play.
Yeah. Just attack it.
Keegan, come over here. Let me get Tyrese on.
Because that's the one thing I have seen watching Tyrese when Indiana's going through their challenges sometimes throughout the season was he's getting frustrated because he's getting picked on, right? He's getting frustrated. And then on the defensive, on the other end, teams are being more physical with him, bumping him, that you can get him, you know, maybe make him like less engaged into the game. He's thinking about other things. And they didn't do that tonight.
Yeah, and he was 0-4 at the beginning of the game. It felt like you kind of had a chance to take him out of it a little bit, really, and just didn't happen. He ends up started 0-4. He made 5 of his next 6, including a bunch of those from 3. Step backs, feeling good, you know, talking crap. And
dude, he and TJ,
especially at the end of the game when he was on the bench while everybody was going crazy. By the way, that Jairus Walker play, what was that? What was that? This man threw it off the backboard. It makes me think of that Shumpert story where he talks about Kobe saying, hey, you had a good game at the end of the third. And this is the same play he did. Throws it off the backboard, catches it, throws it to the corner. And it was like, oh, my God, they're getting like, dude, they're stunting on these guys right now. What is happening?
That, I mean, they literally did. That's what teams are feeling like right now coming in here. I mean, that's the other thing that needs to be talked about more, right? Because if some fans aren't locked into the entire NBA, you're going, oh, the Nuggets, you know, they're really awesome. And the Lakers, they got LeBron and AD, the Pacers, they went to the conference finals. So, like, these teams that the Kings just played have been struggling. I mean, Denver, after coming to Sacramento and somehow escaping with a win, when they were down 10 with 3:55 to go, they lost their next game against Portland. Tonight, they barely escaped an overtime in New Orleans. Like, it was a crazy game. And then you think about the Lakers. They've had major issues. LeBron, like, dipped out for, like, 8 days. They were scuffling. And then the Pacers, who, like, I know they've look like they're turning around now, but they've had their issues too. So it's interesting that Sacramento hasn't been able to capitalize on some of these teams' issues who are also in a fragile state, right? It's not just Sacramento here, like the only team in the league scuffling a little bit right now. You're seeing it with Denver and Minnesota and the teams I just mentioned. And Sacramento just hasn't been able to capitalize at all.
It seems like it doesn't even matter who they play.
It doesn't.
It's going to be the same game no matter what. That at some point, they're going to have an extended lull that's going to be half a quarter. And no matter what, who has a big lead by even the third quarter, that it's going to be close. If the Kings have the lead, they're going to give it back up. And if they're down, to their credit, they will always fight and give themselves a chance, I feel like. And again, tonight, very bad example of that. But it feels like for the most part, it doesn't even matter who they're playing against.
Through 30 games in Mike Brown's first season, they were 17-13. Last year, through 30 games, they were 18-12. This year, they're 13-17 and getting just booed. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things that happened during the game tonight. The boos, for sure. You heard right behind the Kings, near the Kings bench in the Kings tunnel, Keon Ellis chants at one point, because Keon Ellis, who, in my opinion, the last couple of games has brought like a lot of energy and life to Sacramento, he did not see the floor until the end of the game in a blowout tonight. Mike Brown elects to put Trey Lyles at the 5 in a backup spot over Isaac Jones, and he plays Doug McDermott over Keon Ellis tonight. And after the game, he said, oh, it's a minutes thing. My pushback on this, Brendan, I don't know where you used to weigh in on this. You could play more than 8 guys. There's no like law that says you can't play more than 8. And I understand you got to juggle minutes, but I'm even thinking the other night, Doug McDermott plays against the Nuggets. He had some nice moments, right? He scored 16 points. And then he doesn't even play the next 2 games, right? I wonder what Doug's thinking at that point. And then Keon, who I think has had some really nice moments against the Lakers when the Kings were trying to make some sort of comeback and make some noise, he doesn't play until late in this game. What do you make of Keon not playing tonight?
Yeah, I think there's an aspect of some guys are just clearly higher on the pecking order. Like when it comes to him versus Kevin Huerter, I think that at this point, it's pretty obvious that Kevin Huerter has a much longer leash than Keon does and is allowed to get away with a little bit more. And, you know, I got at in a bunch of stuff. I think we were both at in a handful of these things of like, why is nobody asking specifically about Keon?
Oh, is that
Alex
from Benny?
Post-game?
Is that guy Benny?
Probably.
I think
probably. Yeah. Shout out, Ben.
Shout out, Benny.
But he gave his answer. He said that Doug McDermott played, and it essentially took minutes, and Trey also playing the five, by the way, essentially took minutes from Isaac Jones and Keon Ellis because he wanted a bit more shooting. He thought that the shooting that McDermott provided in the Denver game was valuable. And
but now, just to be clear,
the instant response is that Keon is a 40, whatever percent three point.
No, the other response is it was valuable against Denver, not valuable against the Lakers in those two games.
Right. Or also like that Denver game where he was kind of getting cooked on defense. You know, there's a little bit of both sides there.
Yep.
But what I will say about the difference in three-point shooting is like, Keon, very good catch and shoot three-point shooter. Doug McDermott is sprinting full speed through everything, shooting off. And so I think that's a different type of gravity and spacing. I'm not saying I agree. I just tend to always try to understand the other person's logic. And I think there is one there for Mike, but like, not for not playing Keon at all. The 18 minutes of Doug was tough. I thought there were stretches where it wasn't like, oh, you just need him because he's at the four right now. It was like he was playing the 3-4 necessarily. And you also have another bigger guy out there. Like I thought that Keon could have got some opportunity. And I was also a little surprised that he came on in the garbage time minutes. It means nothing, but like typically I feel like Mike won't put a guy out there if he's typically a rotation guy. I didn't play that night in garbage time, but whatever, semantics doesn't really matter there. I think Keon should have got more run than he did, but I can follow the logic a little bit.
The Doug thing I do want to mention tonight. I see what you're saying with the spacing thing, the movement, and you saw it a little bit tonight early. I'm like, okay. And he had a couple that went in and out from beyond the arc. He also had a nice strip of TJ McConnell and then dove on the floor for a loose ball. I'm like, there you go, Doug. That's how you're going to stay on the floor if you compete like that. But yeah, I just think Keon is like too good of a player, and I understand he's not perfect. I think some people look at him as like, dude, he's just a stud and a half and he's got to be out there. There's only so many minutes for sure, but he does enough good out there that to me outweighs maybe some of the bad. And I think he's been improving on some of the things that haven't been strengths of his, right? Like being comfortable with the ball, making quick decisions. Sometimes it's inconsistent, and even defensively, he probably fouls too much. But I also think he's doing it out of like, he's trying to do the right things out there more times than not. The deflections, the steals, the blocks, like he brings energy into the building when you're doing that stuff. And then when the Kings get out and transition, they're a super dangerous team. So I look at where this team is at right now and go, there's just no way you don't play Keon Ellis. I think Keon Ellis would be playing on a lot of teams in the NBA right now.
I think so too. You see a bunch of national guys confused about why Keon isn't playing. I honestly think he should be in the starting lineup. Like,
well, and maybe that's, you know, Mike Brown loves to get a sample of something and then make an adjustment. Where the Kings are at right now, maybe that's the adjustment. Maybe it is Monk going back to the bench, putting Keon back out there, see if they can set the tone defensively a little bit with Keon Fox and Keegan. And maybe you get DeMar going a little bit more offensively.
Yeah, I it makes sense to me. I think Mike's whole point of why he didn't want to start Malik for 100, however many games that he was in Sacramento before he finally did, was it just about being easier to stagger minutes. And now we get a stretch where there is going to be more pick and roll than any DHO stuff because De'Aaron Fox is out there with Kevin Huerter, Keegan Murray, Doug McDermott, and Trey Lyles. You know, and it's like, all right, go do everything, De'Aaron. And typically you might have Malik in those that little stretch as well. So I think that I would look at going back in that direction. I don't know that I expect them to, though. Like it, and maybe Malik will be fine with it. But, you know, there is the other aspect. This guy wanted to start for a long time. He, I'm sure, feels good about it. Domas made a comment of about time after he finally did end up in that starting lineup. Like, and what I've seen the DeMar DeRozan conversation about people saying that too. I actually don't hate the idea. I just, are you really doing that to a guy? What, 30th all time in scoring? Like,
I'm open-minded to anything at this point, you know, and obviously you want to keep a team together. But it's tough. You're right. Monk just got put in the starting lineup and all those things you just mentioned are legit points. I think the challenge to, is just defensively at times. I think Monk's done some nice things defensively, but it's always going to be a challenge out there when you have Fox and Monk, two smaller guys. At least with Keon, I know he's slightly taller, I think, than Malik. a little bit longer, I think.
Maybe a little bit. Definitely length. And I would say like plays thing. Bigger, more physical, but super handsy.
Yep. Man. A couple of things I wanted to bring up too. Points in the paint tonight. Sacramento in the paint, 19 for 47 in the paint, 40%. Sabonis in the paint, 7 of 18, 38% in the paint tonight for Sabonis.
That was one of the things when I was like, hey, you know, just a mindset thing coming into the game. He even chuckled at himself. He's like, you know, a lot of them were my own misses that I got back up.
So. True. At least he admitted that. It was tied at 52 at the half. Second half, 70 to 43. Indiana shot 67% in the second half, 8 of 17 from three. Sacramento shot 31% in the second half. What's crazy is Indiana had 5 turnovers. Sacramento had 6 turnovers. Sacramento scored 0 points off the Pacers' 5 second half turnovers. Zero. Indiana scored 11 off the 6 Kings turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a being locked in thing, right? That's supposed to be the easiest part of the game for the Kings, in my mind, is once you get that turnover. I don't know how many of them were live ball necessarily, but once you get that, get out and run. Even if it's not live ball, like, get out and run. Especially that unit that we mentioned with like just Fox out there. It's a younger group for the most part. Get some pace back. You know, Malik can do that. Domas can do that. There's so many guys that can do that. And they just did not play very fast. You have to score in transition. And I thought their transition defense has been really good for most of this season too. Wasn't great tonight. I mean, they.
Yeah, it wasn't good against the Lakers either.
No, it wasn't. Like, James was asking about them giving up in that third quarter postgame, and I think he has every reason to. Like, it did sort of look like that's what was going on.
Looking at some of the lineups, too, because we've been mentioning Doug getting minutes tonight, I just, it's a little bit confusing to me. Mike Brown does talk about defense a lot, right? Anytime people bring up offense, there is some pushback on, like, yeah, but if we just we get the stops and fight through and compete, We can win games. All right. Shots will fall. We'll trust shots are going to fall. We'll create them, play the right way. The offense has been a problem recently. So I do understand maybe leaning toward offense. Here's what I don't understand, though, is like, I think it's really tough to play a lineup where Herter and Doug are on the floor at the same time. That's really challenging.
Yeah, with what, like Trey Lyles at the five sometimes, or like Domas.
Yeah, let me look at some of the. There's a lineup that had Fox, Herter, Doug, Keegan, and Lyles. Then you had Fox, Herter, Doug, Lyles, Sabonis. Fox, Monk, Herter, Lyles, Sabonis. Yeah.
So you have 3 players on the floor that Indiana can be like, give me that guy. 3 at the same time. Like, it's. And they need wing and forward help so desperately. And I forget what it was we mentioned earlier that's been the same thing over and over. That's another consistent since at least Mike Brown got here, and it really predates that, you know, Casey Akpala, Mo Harkless, you know, you want to go further back, Daquan Jeffries, like they're not Juan Toscano Anderson, Jay Crowder, now Doug McDermott, like these guys are not the answer, and they need more wing and forward help. And there's no two ways about it. That's just a fact to me. And I feel like that's been the case for a while. And at some point you got to pull the trigger, and you know, there's a ticking clock now with your point guard.
Yes. Let's talk about that in a second. Do you have anything more on tonight's game that jumped out to you? Like any notes that interested you or anything else we like missed?
Not necessarily. I'd say Malik in the locker room post game said that, you know, he thinks he's going to step up a little bit more. And I think that he meant like vocally. And I think he is a guy that could get on people, like we mentioned earlier, of who's going to be the one to get in people's face, really hold the people accountable. And obviously when you do that, you have to also be playing at a level yourself and doing all the things you're trying to get at people on other people about. But I think Malik could be that guy and step up. Maybe I'm going to look out for him to talk a little bit more moving forward. He already talks a lot, but you know, in accountability fashion.
They need that. They need that for sure. In the comments, Shortcake, Brendan, you need a new light. You are looking extra pale tonight.
Wow. Can I try to change these colors while we're here?
Dude, it's not that big a deal, but you are getting roasted, Manny. Very pale. It is pale.
Watch. All right. We're getting the close up cam.
It's a trap. You mean he needs a better camera, LOL.
I do need a better camera. See, these are way worse. You know, this is great camera work by me.
Well,
I don't know, man.
By the way, it doesn't. I don't care at all. But you know, people like to roast. It's fun, man.
Yeah.
First of all, I also appreciate you doing this. You just worked a long day. You get back, and then you're hopping on to talk about this shitty ass game.
No problem.
Right before Christmas.
Usually, I'm tuning in to these on my way home.
Okay.
Trying to, you know, get a gauge, make sure Deuce is mentally okay.
I haven't. It's been up and down. Last night, did they play last night? It was last night.
Yeah, last
night. My God. Last night was
there's
sadness.
There's been so many home games.
Last night was sadness. The game before that was anger. Tonight is like, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you have balanced me out a little bit. You know, I don't have Morgan here, you know, prodding me or giving me a look. I don't know.
I'm in a little bit of like there's a sense of panic going on here for sure.
Yeah. Know? Oh, there's no doubt about
there
it.
There has to be.
Yes. It's bad right now. There's no way you can say otherwise. And as it continues to slide, the questions become even more complicated. You know what I mean? One more thing.
There's no clear right answer to like fixing it. Right. So I think you mentioned it a little earlier, but it's like, are you going to fire someone? And what, you're going to fire a front office member a month before the deadline?
And what's that do? What's that do? Like to me, okay. Some fans are going to be happy. Does it make you better tomorrow? No.
And I can't think of an interim head coach. I've asked people this. Okay, actually, the two that have been mentioned to me of interim head coaches that have been successful, Joe Mazzulla, who got it going into the season, by the way, and just inherited an already great team,
sure,
said, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. Doesn't count. And the other one was Ty Lue, who, by the way, had LeBron James on his team.
He replaced
and
David
now
Blatt.
We know in hindsight, Ty Lue is an amazing coach. But no interim head coach is coming in here and turning this around. So it's like, in my mind, either you have to make a trade. I don't see how it's any other way. I feel like for 2 years, I've been okay with the Monty is opportunistic. Monty and Wes, this front office, opportunistic. Patience is understandable because your next move, you don't have much wiggle room after the fact. You're in a spot where you kind of have to be desperate, which is a scary spot to be in. But I think it's just kind of the reality, unless you're whatever with De'Aaron wanting out.
Here's my thing with this, though. We're at the stage where a few weeks ago I was like, yeah, you can make a subtle tweak and they'll be fine because they're, you know, at the 500 mark or right around that, you're feeling good. This is slip sliding. And all I'm thinking about is, okay, what's the trade that gets Sacramento pushed in the right direction again? Because now you've dug yourself a hole. You've lost a ton of home games. I mean, 6-11 at home. Is that real? I keep looking at that. Like that's the real wild number. 6-11 at home, 7-6 on the road. And 2 years ago, they actually had a better road record than home record in the year they won 48 games. So the home thing has been an issue, but this is like a large issue. This is one of the worst home records in the NBA. So I guess my question is like, is there a tweak that can really pull this together? Is it enough? And I know it's not even technically Christmas. There's a lot of season to go. And you look at the West and there are other teams who are, you know, fighting and they're having issues too. But it just feels very daunting for Sacramento. Is there a move to you that you think of or a player that could help swing things back in a good direction?
I mean, Cam Johnson definitely stands out. I'm getting a little... I don't know. I feel like somebody else is going to outbid them for Cam Johnson.
It's going to be expensive.
Yeah. And you only have so many assets to work with. I kind of laid it out today. I think they have 3 first rounders available to them, but one of those would have to be a swap. They have 2 second rounders available as well. And like those second rounders are where you, when like backup center was mentioned in that Athletic article, right? And I started looking at like Nick Richards today or Jonas Valanciunas. And it's like, well, it's going to take you 2 seconds. It's like, okay, well, then you don't have any more seconds to work with. And Dennis Schroeder was just got for seconds, you know, like seconds are valuable, I think, to get these fringe guys. But for the first, like, does John Collins do something? I think what you also have to believe is that, yeah, the player is going to be productive. He's going to be a rotation guy. Maybe you slot him in the starting lineup, whatever that may look like with who moves to the bench. But you have to also hope it will give this team a bolt of energy, that like it will re-enhance the belief in this group. Because as much as these guys will all say, we believe in this group, we're talented, the play on the floor does not show that there's a level of belief. Now, maybe the fight back, you could argue that exists a bit there for sure. But I think that it could re-spark the energy that this team could have. You know, I feel like there's been years where we've seen, how much different did De'Aaron Fox look right before Tyrese Haliburton got traded and right after that deadline?
I mean,
remember he had like an injury going on and he decided that was the time he was going to take and whatever. He did have an injury going on. But then Domas comes in. There's the infamous picture of him hugging Domas. Like, the energy changes with everybody else around you too. And, you know, I don't know how reliable that is to bet on, but I feel like you kind of have to.
And maybe that's, I don't know. I guess I'm to the point. I just feel like it's all wishful thinking, you know? I'm usually the optimistic person.
This is the issue, right?
What?
Like, what else do you do, though?
The options are you blow it up or you make a tweak. And here's my thing right now, because this isn't just like a normal situation where, hey, it's like, hey, everyone's under contract. Everyone's happy. We're just scuffling right now. We might just need one tweak and we'll get it going. Your point guard, De'Aaron Fox. There's been a lot of talk about him this week, right? The stuff in The Athletic with Rich Paul and meeting with Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox and the question of what's next. And then you see the players that were listed. I'm not sure that's moving the needle that much, right? With some of those guys listed. And so let's say you make that move and you get hot and you get to the first round, but then you get kicked, knocked out in six games. Is that enough for De'Aaron to be like, I want to be here? And then do you want to give him a long-term deal if it only get to the first round? Or is he just going to want to go somewhere else and you trade him? Like, this is the tough part with where the Kings are at now. Is like, this is not a situation where De'Aaron's here long-term, right? He's got, what, a year and a half left on his deal? So, I don't know, man. Cam Johnson is interesting, but it's like, yeah, you were just talking about mortgaging some picks. All right, do you want to give up some picks for Cam Johnson and then you get eliminated? This is, thinking optimistically, it fires you up and you get to the first round, you lose, maybe you get to the second round, you give up a couple of picks to get Cam Johnson, and then De'Aaron Fox wants out. I don't know, maybe you feel like that's okay too, because then you can recoup some of those assets in a trade for De'Aaron, and maybe you kind of retool instead of rebuild. I don't know. There's so many things going through my mind, as you can tell, Brendan.
I mean, there's a lot, and this is why the position is so tough. Like, you're kind of backed into a corner of making a desperation move, and those are obviously risky, as by definition, you know. So
would Cam Johnson in your mind, even if you gave up two first round picks, do you think that's worth it to take that swing? Do you think that could propel him? You just think about it. You have got Fox, your starting lineup would have Fox, Sabonis, Keegan, Cam, and then I don't know what else is what goes right in the trade, but
It's a tough one for me. I guess it's a lot easier if you're not being in that seat to say yes, obviously. Yeah. Because what, like, are we talking? We're probably talking unprotected picks.
Oh.
You know, like, people talk about this Dallas, not necessarily unprotected, but low protections. Like, that's how these picks become valuable, right? Like, people point to Dallas, myself included, what they did last year. They went out, made some deals. They get PJ Washington. They get Daniel Gafford, obviously. It cost them a lot to go do that. For PJ Washington, Grant Williams, Seth Curry, and a 2027 first round pick, top two protected. At that point, it was like Luka could not be there by then.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of risk.
But you know what they did? They went, we have to keep him here. Right? And the only way to keep him here is to take a swing like that. Because if he decides to leave, we're fucked anyway.
Yep.
Like, so let's go out and take that swing and get two guys that we feel can be impactful. And what do you know? It was enough to get them to the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And they're a really good team this year. And look at how they've kind of tweaked some things now. It's like, oh, we maneuvered. We got Najee Marshall. We get Klay Thompson. We still got Gafford and Lively. We got, you know, PJ Washington. They have a good team, you know? You know,
it's funny. All four of those dudes would be great on the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, literally all of them.
And I love that you're bringing this up. It's something I admire so much about what the Mavs did last year. Grant Williams, they signed as a free agent, and they thought he was going to be impactful. They didn't hang around and go, all right, we'll just kind of like see how it plays out. Like, let's just go through the rest of the year. No, they go, it's not working. Luka's not vibing with him. we're not really, we're kind of struggling. Let's take a swing at something. And they got rid of him. And they cut bait fast. It's okay to do that. It's okay. And that's where I think Sacramento is now. You have to make a move maybe that you're not going to be comfortable with.
Yep. It's okay to admit mistakes. I'm with you. I think that's one of actually the most admirable things. But you also, from a front office guy, but you also have to be in a position where you know that, like, if I admit this mistake, it's not going to come around and bite me. You know, it's not going to be a bad look from the person that hired me. And so, you know, I just a small portion of it. But obviously, yeah, you got to take risks. Scared money don't make money.
Now, right? my counter to all of this is it's easier to take that type of gamble if you're Dallas when you've got Luka, who is a generational talent.
Yeah.
You know, the Kings, I love De'Aaron Fox. He's a borderline all-star, right? Like, he's been an all-star once. All-NBA guy once. Luka is, like, in the MVP conversation, all-NBA every year. Kyrie Irving, a little bit of a gamble when they got him. But when everyone knows when Kyrie's, like, locked in and on, he's one of the most dynamic scorers in the league. That guy's an all-star, all-NBA caliber player. They've got two of them. Two of them. And one of them's a generational guy. The Kings have a guy in De'Aaron Fox who everyone thinks, yeah, he's got all-star. He could be an all-star. But no one looks at Fox as like a generational talent. No one puts Fox in the category of Kyrie Irving or Sabonis in this category. You know what I mean? So that's where it's tough for Sacramento. And that's where I struggle with. For me, as someone who's been watching this team forever, my whole life, I'm not ready for them to like just dismantle everything. But just because I'm not ready doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do either.
That's the whole fork in the road here is really, do you, I mean, it's also a decision from the Kings side. Like, they don't just have to give De'Aaron this max contract when it comes back around. Like, they have something to consider there as well of, is this guy good enough to be a number one? But my whole issue is that that's the hardest piece of the puzzle to find, right? This is why teams tank. This is why Detroit is seemingly turning around. They got a lot of role players that, you know, cleaned up the surrounding pieces of their roster, but Cade Cunningham is that guy. And they had to tank their ass off to get Cade Cunningham. And
but that hasn't always worked either.
If you decide that Fox is not the guy,
yeah,
I get it. What is your path to getting another guy?
Dude, yeah.
My whole argument constantly is like, I think that you're in a spot where you kind of have to bet on him to eventually reach that status, that you'll surround him with enough stuff because you don't have very many other options. I feel like that's the state of the team that's been built.
And I guess that's going back to the larger issue is these are things we've known for a couple of years. You know, the first season they were really good with Mike Brown. I was cool with them not making any real moves at the deadline. They got Kessler Edwards, right? You know, it was the first year with that group. You kind of want to see it, like, cool. But then the next deadline, like last deadline, they didn't do anything. That was a tough one. That's a really tough one. And I think it's tough on guys in the locker room. I'm sure it was tough on De'Aaron Fox too, going, we know the weaknesses. We didn't really address them. Here we are. This league is athletic. There's wings galore. Every time you watch the Kings play another team, it's like, God, you could use that guy. You could use that guy. They've got size, athleticism at the wing spots, and Sacramento just doesn't have that at all, right? Like, Keegan is their wing. So yeah, if you're gonna build it around Fox and maximize how talented he is, you gotta put these pieces, you gotta have shooting around him, you've got to have length and athleticism, especially when you got Sabonis, and they don't have that. So this whole like standing pat thing, I don't get it.
Can we entertain the idea of trading Fox real quick, just because that this has been,
I mean, it's a real thing now,
a big conversation recently. Say I'm just going to throw out a random scenario here, right? Say it's Houston and say that we're talking about Jalen Green and Tari Eason, and you plug that into this team. What is their future? What is the state of the team? Where do they go from there? Are you what position are you in at that point?
Okay. Can I get Jabari Smith too? Like,
I would love that.
It's
You don't think that, I mean, and picks we're talking, which I think is a valuable part of this. You have more assets to play with things later.
What's interesting, so Jalen is under contract after this year for just two more years. He signed a new deal to give himself flexibility. He's got a player option for the final year of his deal.
Yeah.
Making 33, 36. Interesting deal. I mean, if I'm talking to Houston, I'm like, yeah, I mean, obviously Jalen, I would be interested in, but I need some size too. And so your question is, would that make them?
Yeah. Like you say, replace it with Jabari if you want, you know, but like insert above average young player X and Y and two first round picks. And it's like, that's what I worry is then what's the state of the team? Like I genuinely think the best way, if you move on from Fox, fully reset it. But
and I mean, you're talking about
from the
trade
time
everything.
I've been here, they've given me any reason to think that they want to do that.
No. And I think that's what's tough with where the Kings have been for so many years, right? Is like when you've been bad, they made the playoffs one time in 16 years, right? It's like 16 of the last 17 they've missed. It's really hard to sell like, hey, all right, guys, trust us. We'd rebuild and do it the right way. It's a tough sell, but sometimes it might be the right one, you know? I mean, you look at OKC kind of dismantled things interesting years ago, right? And it took them some time. I think it was a little easier for them to go in tank mode once they made the Paul George deal and they got SGA and those picks. Like that was unbelievable.
Houston, De'Aaron's not James Harden, but Houston recovered from that one fairly quickly.
Yeah, I mean, uncertainty scares me, but I'm to the point now where it's like, dude, they're 13 and 17. You know, their peak with this group together, mainly, right, was 48 wins, which was awesome. And they lost in the first round. Last year, they lost in the play-in. Like, it's tough because you want to appreciate just being in the mix and being competitive. But if you're trying to build this out long-term and make it sustainable, you have to be honest. I mean, there's expectations. The reality is, even if you were like kind of down on this team going into the year, you weren't high in the DeRozan pickup, I don't know that you would predict that they'd be 13 and 17 right now.
Like, yeah, I don't think so.
I think you'd be like, oh, they're probably a couple games over 500. Oh, they're a play-in team, maybe. Right now, it doesn't look like they're going to have a shot at that, right? Man.
Yeah, not really. It's a tough spot. It's the reality of where they're at right now.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing, Deuce, is that I keep finding myself thinking, and this, I guess, like coping fades more with each one of these losses, but I keep finding myself thinking, man, one win streak would do so much for this team.
Dude, I'm with you. And I thought this chance at home was it. Like, yeah, I was like, cool, you know, this is a great opportunity. You've got the time off now after having such a condensed schedule. You don't leave California until you play Boston January 10th. And they had been playing some better basketball. Like, man, you should have got that Memphis win. But God, that Houston win was nice. And, you know, oh, they were scrappy in New Orleans. They figured it out. It's funny how this week went, right? They started this week at 13 and 13. And they were 3 minutes and 55 seconds away from being 14 and 13 if you beat Denver. What's it feel like? What's it look like had you beat Denver the other night? Yep. And now you just feel like...
Or if you get the defensive rebound off Anthony Davis's missed free throw.
Do you get a look at it at the end? Yeah. Yeah. I mean... Yeah, it's there's so many of those what if moments. And yeah, and I think that's where I think it's a struggle for some, because you mentioned some of the advanced stats and that rating, all this stuff. It's also like, God, they've been in a lot of close games. The fact that they played 30 games and 13 of them have been decided by 5 points or less, you're like, God, how are you 3-10 in those? That just seems impossible.
Yeah. And it's the defense, like Mike Brown. I mean, again, Mike Brown will always point to this, and that doesn't mean that they don't know the offense is their strength, but I think I'm ballparking here, but like sixth or eighth in offensive rating in the clutch, but they're in the mid 20s in defensive. And it's, you know, the more reliable and consistent thing you can do on a nightly basis is play defense. You can always play defense. You can have the best offensive possession ever. Sometimes shots not going to go down. You're not going to be consistent if you can't. They're not a good defensive team as a whole, but
yeah,
you have to, in a close game, 2 minutes left, it's still going to be an impact. But like, Malik can do enough for 2 minutes, you know, when it comes down to it at the end of a game, for them to at least not be as bad as they have been is all I mean.
I agree. I mean, I went back and did like a little breakdown on the Denver game because Mike Brown was talking about the backdoor cuts. And so I went back the next morning, I was watching it, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, these were just like falling asleep. And you don't have to, you could be an average defensive team and be able to like prevent the things that happened that night.
Yeah. You know, yeah. That's one of those things, though, by the way, that's those details, I feel like, have been some of the issues so often this year, the rebounding, the turnovers. And I'm like, all I see in my comments, and I know people are like, ignore these things, whatever. Everybody is on Mike Brown's ass. What is Mike Brown going to do about these backdoor cuts? I'm not saying, like, the Keon conversation we had earlier, I think that he's flawed. Don't get me wrong. He's not a perfect coach, but so much of it is effort and execution. And sure, maybe at some point that means you need to have a conversation of like, are they receiving the message? Are they listening? But so much of the execution, I'm like, guys, what is Mike supposed to do here?
Yeah. And I think when you're at this point at 13 and 17 with expectations, right? You had DeMar DeRozan, people expected you to be better. Even if people were like, oh, that's kind of an interesting fit, but God, there's a lot of talent there. The finger pointing is going to start. And now, with the way it's going, especially with all these home losses, it's like front office, De'Aaron, Sabonis, Keegan, he's not good enough, and Mike Brown. Well, the easiest thing you could do is fire a coach. That's right. Like, that's what teams do. It's like, it's easier than getting rid of a player. You can't just like cut a player. You know, counts against your cap. You could fire Mike Brown tomorrow. It's not going to hurt your cap. You'd have to pay him. Right. But yeah, I think it's one of the easiest things to do. Blame the coach. I don't like his rotation. Here's what I say. Go around the NBA. Go on every team's Reddit. Oklahoma City. I saw fans complaining the other night that Dagnall was not playing Aaron Wiggins enough, criticizing his rotations. OKC's a pretty damn good team. What did we say? Missoula gets criticized. Everyone gets criticized for rotations and stuff. I don't think Mike Brown's been perfect this year. I think my biggest thing with Mike this year is just the rotation. I would recommend just give a 5-game sample size of, you know what? We're going to stick with the same guys. 5 games. I just want to see it work. And even if they make mistakes, we'll talk about on the side. But unless it's like a blatant, lazy mistake, we're keeping them in there. You got to figure it out. We got to play through it. We need you to be productive. But there's just been so much yo-yoing. It's like, all right, you know the main guys are going to play. Everyone else, sit down and buckle up. You may be playing. You may not be playing. It depends on the night. And if you make one mistake, all right, we're going Orlando over you, Isaac. Or, hey, Orlando, sorry, Alex Len's playing tonight. It's tough. That's a really tough thing for a player to deal with. You know, Keon was a starter at one point, not playing. Right, Doug scores 16 in the game, doesn't play the next 2 games, and this type of stuff happened last year. So those things I think are probably my biggest gripe. But the things you mentioned are exactly right. Like, at some point we have to just talk about the players. Like, go out there and execute. You guys are better than this. Like, don't be ball watching Nikola Jokic. You can't just be staring at him because he will pick you apart. Like, that's what he does. I mean, this is basic level, see man, see ball. Like, you get taught at a very young age how to do that. Even the other night, Mike Brown is literally talking about how to throw a post-entry pass. What? Yeah. We're talking about that at the NBA level? Last year,
they talking about closeouts. Closeouts 2 years in a row, Deuce. Like, what?
It's like they know this. Sure,
I think De'Aaron Domas teaches at their camps in the offseason.
Yeah, that's really tough. So, yeah, I'm with you big picture wise on that. Yeah. I got a couple more things I want to get to. I also want to get to some final thoughts as we approach the holiday season with Brendan. I do want to say shout out to all the basketball sickos watching us live. I can't believe the live audience tonight. The Brendan Nunes pop is here.
Can I get a hell yeah?
Oh, dude. Damn it. I have it queued up. Do it again.
Can I get a hell yeah?
Give me a hell yeah. You guys are the best in the chat. The poll question tonight was, what should the Kings do with the roster? The options, blow it up and rebuild, tweak things and address weaknesses. Those are the two options. Blow it up and rebuild, or tweak things and address weaknesses. Brendan, the voting, 858 votes. It's 50-50.
Wow. I would have thought we'd lean heavily towards blow it up.
50-50.
Wow.
Where do you lean at the moment? Think about that. But first, I want to mention that tonight's podcast is presented by our friends over at Mother. Hey, if you need an awesome meal, there's no better place than to go to than Mother at 2319 K Street. They've been in Sacramento for almost a decade. They wanted to represent Sacramento through their produce in a creative and casual manner. Their focus is on delicious food using seasonal and local produce. They got a Michelin bib too. They're also big Kings fans. It's at a great location in the heart of downtown Sacramento, 2319 K Street. Check them out. You can also order online at mothersacramento.com. It's a great place to go before a game too, because before Kings games, you get 50% off drinks. That's at Mother, 2419 K Street. We're also presented today by our friends of our Golden One Credit Union. Kings fans, this one's for you. Golden One is the official credit union of the Sacramento Kings. Scan the QR card on the screen or go to goldenone.com to see their range of products and services to help start your financial journey today. And how about these perks? Up to 50% off Kings home games through Golden One's online discount ticket portal, plus 15% off merch when you use Golden One's card at a Kings team, at the Kings team score. Let me try that again for you guys. 15% off merch when you use your Golden One card at the Kings team store. That's how you win as one at Golden One. Also presented by our friends over at Northwest Exteriors. If you're looking for new windows, there's no better place to go. New windows, it's a big decision to make. But if you have like one of those old windows that are like rattling when it's windy out, or like in the summertime, it's hot in your house. Oh, why? Air is leaking in. People can just like open your window. You need new windows. It makes your house look sexy, makes you feel safe, and your energy bills will go down, 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 down. And right now, Northwest Exteriors has a deal that you should check out. They're offering to give you a $109 window buyback offer. Plus, they will donate $20 to the Warrior Foundation Freedom Station for each window purchase. The foundation supports veterans. That offer expires December 29th, 2024. I encourage you to check out their website, northwestexteriors.com, because they are
simply the best. Trust Northwest.
Hey, Brendan.
Killed that.
Thank
killed
you.
That.
Thank
Chad's
you.
Telling me that I'm obligated to do some song too.
If you want.
If I just get a little, I'm not opposed to it, but I need a little. Is that, do we get like, can I hear Mo do it one time? I know she's not here.
Simply the best
run back
one or what?
Beamless Nights thing.
Oh, a Beamless Night? Dude, last night, I'm going to actually pull that up and play it. Because it was like, it was one of those moments on the podcast where she was like complaining about being tired and hungry. It was a shitty game. And I just mentioned, yeah, it's been a Beamless week. And then she just went into it and sang. I was like, how did she do that? I don't know if you're going to be able to hear it, though, actually, if I play it with how it's set up.
Shut up and light the beam is stuck in my head nonstop, by the way.
I'm going to play this just real fast, even if you can't hear it, just because I talked about playing it. So this is, and it applies to tonight.
Bless, it's a beamless week, and I'm waiting for Santa. Can he bring me wins in his old bag and bring me joy on top of Rudolph? And maybe I don't even need you. Maybe I don't want to see you. And maybe you're just nothing and you don't exist. I'm talking about Santa. Because it's a beamless night. And if you were real, you'd bring me a fucking beam.
One of the highlights of the season was Morgan Reagan doing that.
I like the emo vibes to it, you know.
Are you musically talented? Like, what do you have?
You know, I'm not opposed to trying. Like, I missed out on our buddy Sean Cunningham's birthday party the other night. I heard they ended at karaoke, and I'm a little sad that I didn't get. When we all went out, little mini backstory. I don't remember if you were there, Deuce, but when we went to San Francisco and a bunch of media guys ended up spending the night there during the playoffs, a handful of us all went out. We ended up at a karaoke place at the end of the night. And I had never done like public karaoke, you know, I'll get a room with some friends and stuff or whatever, but I like beat myself up after for so long thinking like, man, I just had no clue what song I wanted to do. That was my only thing I was hung up on. And every time I listen to a lot of music from that moment, I'm like, oh, this could be a karaoke song.
Yeah.
This could be a karaoke song. And I've missed out. So I'm not opposed to it. I don't know about Mo's whole freestyling thing here, though.
It's improv. She's talented. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Like, sure. I like karaoke too. Like, Sean invited me out to that. And it was like, Sean, the Kings play tomorrow at 3.
Yeah.
What time are you guys going out? Oh, like, I don't know. I'm trying to probably get there at like 10:30. I'm sorry, what?
10:30? I got the same start time. Yep, which by the way means a lot later than 10:30.
Yeah, exactly. And that means like plus, you know, I gotta be on TV the next day. I can't be hungover deuce with bags under my eyes. I already had to have makeup put on before the last game. I had Chelsea Gray's awesome makeup artist do me up a little bit, you know, clean me up a little bit.
Gotta do it.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. If we had I don't know. If I had those lyrics in front of me for Mo, then maybe I could try to recreate it. But off the top of my head, man.
All right, dude. It's all good. It's all good. Yeah, you did get me a little excited, but it's fine. What did I say we were going to talk about before we went into the break?
My opinion or our opinion on the poll.
The poll question. What should the Kings do with the roster? Blow it up and rebuild or tweak things and address weaknesses? Right now, it's at 51-49, tweak things and address weaknesses, leading. Where do you weigh in at the moment? And by the way, what you feel right now may not be what you feel next week. So,
yeah, I lean towards tweak things. Honestly, I think the most ideal thing is to fully reset, like fully embrace the tank. But I get, we talked about it, like history of the franchise. It's hard to do that. I get that. So, where they're at, I think that you bet on Fox. I'm still a big Fox believer. Yeah. I think that this guy he's having the best season of his career, by the way, and I still think there's still room to go up. So I think that this is the closest thing that you're going to get to a number one on a championship team that can be it on the right night. He was great in that Golden State series, by the way, the one playoff series that we've seen. There's guys that elevate in big moments, and De'Aaron, you know, known like, oh, when he gets pissed off, he plays way better, like, he might also just play way better in the playoffs, and we don't really know very well. I think it's the closest thing you're going to get to a number one, and that's the hardest thing to find. So I think you got to try to do what you can to keep them around and retool, get some wings, get some forwards. Maybe don't keep drafting point guards in the first round.
I think I'm at that point of tweak things and address weaknesses. But like, to me, it needs to happen soon. I don't know that you can wait till February, but then you get into the other point is like, these teams know you're desperate.
Right.
They're seeing what's happening right now. They're reading The Athletic. They're talking. They understand. They're connected with other agents and hearing the Fox stuff. And oh man, they're 13-17. Like, they understand what's on the line here.
Yeah. There's typically, like, as a selling team, it's like, oh, we should wait till the deadline. We're going to get the best deal possible then. Yeah. But I do think there are some teams that could be more incentivized on the other side to try to make a move, like Utah. I forget the protections on their pick, but they owe it to somebody else. But unless it falls under certain protections, they absolutely want to try to be in the Cooper Flag race. And does getting rid of John Collins I saw something mentioning it's a first round pick, but they think that price could come down.
Mm.
You know, could it be 2 second round picks because you want to embrace the tank? Is, you know, Portland in that for some reason? I don't know how to feel about Jeremy Grant, but, you know, Jonas Valanciunas on the Wizards. I think there are certain teams that would be encouraged to move on earlier rather than later for tanking purposes.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear they need to do something. And they may have to do something that makes them uncomfortable, like I said, whether it's maybe even trading someone that you don't even think about. I think everyone points to, like, trading Trey or Kevin. You may have to give up something that's maybe a piece that you didn't anticipate giving up. Like, I don't think anything is off the table right now, in my opinion.
Nothing. Nothing at all. Jake Fisher mentioned that other teams are curious to see what they want to do with Malik Monk. He also said that he doesn't think the Kings are doing that, but when you start to figure out, okay, what are they sending off of value? What's the best thing you can get here? Like Keegan, Malik, maybe Devin are all very, in my mind, have good value. And that's how you get tricky here. And let's not forget, I mean, just played this Pacers team. This is a guy that, this is a front office that traded away Tyrese Haliburton when nobody expected that in the slightest.
That's true.
So anything, everything is on the table, 100%.
Man, what could it be? And I, you know, it seems like Devin Carter's getting closer. He's playing a lot of games. He's playing a lot of games with coaches recently, and they're going hard too. I would not be surprised if we see him sooner than we realize.
Soon. I definitely think soon.
But then I go, where the hell does he play? That's where you go, maybe is a move has to happen, right?
Like you're adding another conversation guard. The Keon conversation we had how does Devin also factor into this conversation? When Devin gets to a point where, I mean, if he does become productive early, that's when we're like fully into holy crap, there's a log jam at guard. You need to balance this roster.
God, now I get back to the optimistic side. I'm like, man, all of a sudden Devin's back. You make a tweak and you get new energy with Devin. He's out there dunking on people, getting stops, blocking shots, running the floor, hitting threes. And, oh, they added a wing too and a big. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
We're back.
Trey's played more than two games, and it's a rhythm again. By the way, people are like shitting on Trey online. I'm like, guys, this guy didn't play for almost a month. He wasn't very good, don't get me wrong, in these games, but he, if anybody, was the one I'm like, I get it a little bit.
And last year he shot 38% from three. I didn't feel like he shot that well last year from three, because this year it's like down to like 33%.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got a problem staying on the floor.
For sure. So. Yeah, a little bit of everything. Groin, calf. He's got that little sleep going on. A little bit of everything. And, yeah, I mean, Domas, keep tabs on Domas. Domas been questionable coming into a few of these games. And
I'm glad you brought this up, because I think during the tough times and when things are going really poorly, we tend to, like, dismiss those type of things. Like, it doesn't matter. You're making excuses, if you acknowledge these things. I think that's another tough part for Sacramento. Their inability to close games and losing has put pressure on these guys to play maybe in games that they shouldn't be playing in. Like Sabonis is back, his ankle, then the Keegan thing. Keegan's like now LeBron, where he's questionable going into every game. And when you guys talked to him the other day before shoot around or after shoot around, he's like, yeah, I jammed my foot in the Houston game. I'm like, that was December 3rd. You've been playing through this since December 3rd? Okay, well, I guess that explains maybe some of the things we're seeing,
For sure. Domas had a back issue. I'm forgetting exactly DeMar. How many games ago. DeMar. Domas, after the game tonight, like he got asked, were you surprised how much you put, or did you expect to play like this much being questionable? He's like, no, not really. He said he was pretty bruised up, but he's feeling okay. And for what it's worth, if Domas even admits that there's a little bit of something, then it's notable because he's one of those guys that's going to say, I'm fine, and De'Aaron does the same thing. But that means it's something. And the quote from Domas was, quote, we're at this point where I can't really rest, even if it's hurting. We've got to try and win games. And I feel like my team needs me. And props to that dude. He will play through anything, everything he can. And he's not like playing some soft finesse game. He is physical as hell.
Yep.
He's going to be out there every single night.
You've got Fox with the hand thing that no one talks about anymore because he's just been playing through it. So
Kevin,
I think,
had his AC joint, which was the another shoulder thing right after having shoulder surgery this offseason. Malik missed a few games. Like,
he missed seven.
I think that there is somewhat of a belief that could be followed of they've had a lot of injuries. They're not shooting well. That things will straighten up. And I don't know that I'd bet on that, but I can get there, I guess.
Winning solves a lot of things.
It does.
But they're not doing that right now. And the Pistons come to town. The Pistons, by the way, just beat the Suns the other night. I know we're going to wrap things up soon because you've been so gracious with your time. Phoenix is 11th now in the West. Phoenix is 14-13 in the West. Sacramento's 13-16, two games behind them. Minnesota's at 14-13. They're a mess. Golden State's been messy. Denver has been messy. It's just an interesting time.
Well, and it shows how quick things change, right? Like Milwaukee and Phoenix are both examples in opposite ways. Phoenix starts super hot, cools off. Milwaukee starts super slow, eventually heats up. Like, it feels like every year there's a team that is flirting with top of the conference in the first half of the season, and then they even out. Or there's a team that really slows down, and then you're like, gosh, they won 70% of their games post All-Star break or something ridiculous. And, you know, we said it, they're talented enough to be the team that turns it around, but they're definitely not giving you very many reasons to believe that's coming soon, if at all.
All right, prediction time. Do they make a move in the next 2 weeks?
2 weeks. Let me
What if your phone goes off on Christmas Day and it's like, hey, the Kings make a trade? You shouldn't be able to trade anyone on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
God, we're talking about it from our perspective. Imagine being the player.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm actually saying it from a player's perspective, okay, too. Yeah. No, can you imagine you're like sitting at home with the family and your agents go, hey, man, you got traded? I'd be so pissed.
Be horrible. Hey, Merry Christmas.
Gotta I guess it's no, you. There's no good timing. I see these companies like lay off people like December 20th. I'm like, Merry Christmas? Like, yeah. I know there's no good time, but like, we can't wait till Q1 for this? I don't know.
Yeah. 2 weeks is mid-December, December 5th, about. I don't think it'll be by then.
Oh, man.
January 5th. I would bet that you want to see that. Just see if it can get better. It's hard to make a deal right now, and you can find a silver lining, and let's see what we have with Devin. You said it. I think that he's close. I think that Devin's close. That can give you some sense of, let's see what we have here before we decide what we view as expendable versus not. Are they going to shoot better? When is Trey going to catch a rhythm? Like, this is all coping stuff, but I think this is kind of what they have to deal with until it's hard to not do something closer to the deadline. Or maybe it's, you know, actually, I'll change this. In the next 2 weeks,
yeah,
I think they'll get their backup center.
Ooh.
And this is just guessing.
Okay.
But I think that the bigger move, the more substantial move, that's supposed to be the one to kind of switch things a little bit, will come closer to the deadline.
That backup big, Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah, or, you know, Nick Richards.
Valanciunas. And I like Nick Richards. I think he might. I don't know. That's interesting. That's an interesting name. The Valanciunas one, I've heard nothing but great things about him. Like, as a locker room guy, just like, he checks boxes that I think maybe the Kings miss a little bit at the moment. Not only just like on the floor, but behind the scenes. Like, I know someone who was around him with New Orleans, who's like, he is the greatest guy ever. You also know the Sabonis connection is right there. He is tough as shit. He's got the size. I don't think
forgiven him for the Chimezie Metu incident.
Never forgive him for that. I know. That's intriguing. Yeah, I mean, I
kind of try to lay out a list of names because I'm like finally at the point where I'm like, all right, I need to really start thinking about trades here. And just like backup centers, trying to see different ideas. And, you know, again, we're talking about backup centers.
Yeah.
Like Chris Boucher, De'Ron Sharp, mentioned Nick Richards, Daniel Tice, which, by the way, Thomas Bryant, I think, is an example of like a framework that we'd be talking here. Indiana just traded for him. It took him a 2031 swap. Like, I think it doesn't cost you much to go get these type of guys in my mind. Like, Duop Reith killed the Kings. Was that this year, last year, something like that?
Yeah, they don't play him.
Yeah. So, nothing great. I mean, Robert Williams could go into that conversation. But, you know, okay, guys.
I like Big Val, and his contract's not crazy. I think it's what, like, yeah, he's got like 2 years at 10. You can always move that. It's not that big.
He also might be the only one. Like, maybe you could talk yourself a little into like Boucher or Tice, I guess, but you could.
I think
try at least a little bit to play him next to Domas. I'm certainly not encouraging starting it that way or anything like that. People are like, I'll move Domas to the four. Absolutely not in my mind, but you could try it
also
a little bit.
Make Sabonis' minutes go down so he doesn't play 37 minutes. Like, you play him 32.
or make him not feel like, hey, I have to play, even though I've gotten the shit beat out of me for the last week.
Yeah. Take a game off. We got Valanciunas starting tonight. Take a couple, you know, we got a good week spaced out. We'll do that. Yeah.
Right now, hey, take a game off. We got Alex Lynn.
Or
no, hey, I like
actually,
Alex
Orlando.
No,
or hate. Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh my goodness, dude. Do you have any final thoughts?
I don't. I have a really good time being on these things. I'm you know, live chats are always fun for sure. You know, I think that something I keep waiting for something to happen. And each one of these games, it feels like, oh, is this going to be the one that's the final cherry? They're going to make some rash move. I kind of think if they were going to make a really rash move, that maybe it would have happened by now. And when it comes to like potential firings, I could be wrong. We could wake up tomorrow morning and who knows?
Oh, please. But no, please. No,
I know. So maybe I shouldn't have said that, but I think I'm waiting on the trade and I do have faith that the trade could potentially make things trend in the right direction.
Yeah.
Whatever that may mean.
I think the one good thing I'm trying to talk myself into is, well, it's going to be different no matter what. Something's going to give. Something's going to happen. Like, they're not in this, like, they're not like 18 and 15. We're like, I don't know. Maybe they can stand pat. Or, this is like, no. Like, something has to change. They're 13 and 17. Expectations, the Fox thing. Like, something is going to change. What's that going to look like? We'll see. But I don't think we're going to sit here at the deadline this year and be like, oh, the Kings didn't make any moves again, except they got Robin Lopez somehow again. You know what I mean?
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Quan Jeffries over there in Charlotte, man. You never know. Bring him back.
Wow. Brendan, I truly appreciate you spending some time. I know I've told you this before, but for the audience, Brendan is such a hard worker in this business. He's grinding. I think he's super talented. It's been fun to see like your journey, and you continue to just work and work and work. You're in Stockton going to games. You're in Sacramento. You're practice all the time. I could tell you just want to get better and grow in this business, and it's been cool to just see your growth. So congratulations on all that. And yeah, you're really talented.
I appreciate you, man. And not just saying this because I'm here. I've also told you this before, but I think you guys do like set the standard for what it's worth. And I'm big on a lot of my motivation comes from if I'm not feeling it in a moment, being like, oh, I know Deuce is working right now. Like, I got to do something, you know, not in a competitive way. There's a lot of people that I think I kind of think of in that regard. But yeah, you set the standard, you know?
I appreciate that. And Joe in the chat loves you. Brendan, low-key cute. That's cool.
Oh, you said Joe?
Joe in the chat, yeah.
I don't know Joe.
All right. Well, he's just calling you cute. It doesn't mean he was like hitting on you or anything.
I appreciate it. What are you getting out of here, dudes?
I don't know. Yeah, your reaction was interesting. I'm taking shots at you.
I appreciate Joe. That's my dad's name, man. It's just a little weird. You know?
Well, I do appreciate the kind words. And thank you so much for filling in for Morgan tonight. And
no,
we'll see you Sunday. Enjoy your Christmas, dude. Enjoy it with the family. And I'll see you the 26th. Kings Pistons.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Appreciate it, everybody.
That's the one and only Brendan Nunes. He's the best. I really appreciate him spending some time. As we wind things down here, I just want to say thank you again. I know we said some thank yous last night, but I also want to shout out my partner in crime, Morgan Reagan, who's not here tonight on her way back from Orlando. Dude, she was in Orlando at the NBA G League Winter Showcase. She did 8 games in 4 days as a color analyst, sideline reporter, and she went back to watch Kings games and then to be here on the podcast after. And you would never know it. Like, she just has the same energy. Like, I'm seeing some of her stuff from today, and I'm like, she was running on like no sleep, and she crushed it. And so I'm just so proud to see where she's come from. Like, I've seen her journey since she was really young in this business, and to see her growth and her competitive fire and her passion to try to get better and improve her craft. It's just so cool. And it's not easy for a woman in this business. And she has had to overcome a lot of obstacles along the way. but she works hard and she's passionate. She loves the game. And most importantly, she treats people well. And I think that just goes a long way. And I think because of that, she's going to go very, very far in her career. She is supremely talented. It's crazy to see how much she's gotten better from year one to now on TV too. You know, so many people, you know, people are hard on the broadcasters that they watch on TV all the time, you know, and there's a lot that goes into it. You're doing new things, you're trying things or whatever, and you're vulnerable. You're on live TV. But she has grown so much, and it's been really cool to see. So I'm really happy for her, and I know she appreciates all you guys for supporting her too. Also, you guys are the best. I've made this very clear. I love Christmas. Why do I love Christmas? I don't know. It's just nostalgic for me. I like Christmas trees, Christmas decorations. I'm not religious, but God, I mess with some religious Christmas music. I like Christmas music, Christmas movies, not like cheesy ones like Home Alone, Home Alone 2. Lock it in. Jingle All the Way, The Santa Claus, Elf, The Grinch. I'm missing some. But my point is, I love this time of year, and I get super like reflective, and I think about the last year as this year of 2024 is winding down. And every year I come back to the fact that I'm just appreciative of this journey I'm on. And I'm so glad that we have formed this podcast community that you guys are a part of. We have to break it down sometimes. Like, we're talking about basketball and we get in these disagreements about the roster, coaching changes, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes I have to take a step back and remind myself, I am on camera right now talking about basketball with fans all over the world. A sport has brought all of us together. People from all over the world, people in Sacramento, other fan bases, all in one spot to hang out and talk about a game. That's cool shit. It's cool. It's cool that this community is what it is. And your guys' support has meant so much to me over the years. This business, I love so much, but it's taxing at times. It's competitive. It's tough. And, you know, I'm just trying to get to the next level of my career. You guys have helped us, me and Morgan, get there with the support because people pay attention. They see what we're doing on the podcast and see the outpouring of support you give us and showing up to our live shows or giving us love on social media or at the arena. It goes a long way. And I truly mean this. Yeah, I know I'm talented, but if I didn't have you guys behind me, rallying me, keeping me motivated, I wouldn't be getting the opportunities to do more broadcast stuff. You guys have meant the world to me, and I am just feel so fortunate to be working in an industry that I love, but most importantly, I get to do it in my hometown of Sacramento. I can't imagine being anywhere else. I don't want to ever have to go anywhere else. I'm just enjoying this moment, and I love you guys. Love you guys so much. Appreciate the super chats as well. I wish I read those before that long thing because that would have been a perfect close. Shout out to Ben. Donating $3. Xavier, shout out to you. Raiders and Kings are poverty. I'm a fan of both. Hang in there. Joe, donating $5. Brown self-imposed rules and system are ruining the season. Pick your best 10 guys and play them. And then G, donating $2. A bonus is a major liability. He is tricking y'all. God, why did I have to read all those negative things? I felt like obligated to mention the super chats. Let me pretend like none of that just happened, please. Just pretend like none of those messages just happened. And it was, we're ending on the sweet, loving thing I just did. Make sure to hit the thumbs up. Make sure to subscribe. Also, hit the comments after the show. Also, one last personal shout, because I just saw Carlin's name in the chat. This last year with Carlin, it's been a year since he had the surgery. December 18th, I'll never forget taking him outside that day, getting ready to host on NBC Sports California for the first time with Mike Bibby. I had never worked with him before. I take Carlin out. It's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I take him, come on, Car. Come here, Car. And his back legs just drop to the ground. What the hell? Go. get him to the vet right away. Has emergency surgery. I get him back. He's thin. I don't know if he's going to be able to walk again. He's on all these pain meds. Going to rehab twice a week. What a journey. Twice a week last year, and just kept going, and he kept getting stronger. And now he is to the point now he can kind of get up on his right leg. But most importantly, this dog doesn't need any medication, no meds. And in addition to that, he's happy. He's the same dog. He doesn't care. He just keeps going. He just keeps going. And so we're going to keep going. Kings may be 13 and 17. It's not fun right now, but I promise you, win or lose, we will have fun on this podcast. That starts December 26th after Kings Pistons. We'll get through this together, just like we got through 9-game losing skids before together. We'll gather. We'll express our frustrations. We'll kick, scream, yell, celebrate, all those things. Most importantly, we'll laugh too. Appreciate you guys so much for the support. I hope you guys have an amazing Christmas. Have a happy holidays. Enjoy this time. And we love you guys so, so, so much. But I got to go. Have an amazing night. See ya.
Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.